You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'll be joined shortly by frequent co-host Dennis Wussman. Although our podcast concentrates on the non-financial side of retirement, from time to time, we like to check in with people who have expertise on the financial planning side of preparing for retirement. Increasingly, advisors are smarter about holistic planning and taking into account the non-financial aspects that we talk about here. Our guest today is Russ Thornton, an Atlanta-based retirement advisor. Russ's firm, Wealth Care for Women, specializes in helping women retire with clarity, comfort, and confidence. Russ has over 28 years' experience as a financial advisor and was named as a top 100 financial advisor by Investopedia in 2019, 2020, and 2021. So, Russ, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
So, Russ, you specialize in retirement planning for women. What's the backstory on what led you to do that?
So, it's a couple of things, actually. I've been a financial advisor for 28 or so years now, which I still can't quite believe. But over those 28 years, I've just found myself working with more and more women. I was either working with a married couple and the husband passed away, and I continued to work with his wife. I got introduced to more and more women that were on their own for a variety of reasons, whether that was widowhood or divorce or other circumstances. And I found I really, really enjoyed working with women, both just the value I could add to their lives. And I also found that, generally speaking, my communication and advice style seemed to resonate really well with women. So kind of using all that as a foundation, I also reflect back to my personal situation. So when I was coming out of college many, many moons ago, my mom and dad were going through a divorce. And the highlight reel is my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She took care of my two younger brothers and I. We had a great family. I think back fondly to my childhood. My dad had done very, very well. He was actually a career financial services professional himself. And so when they got divorced, my mom got a lot of assets, a lot of spousal support, and a lot of child support for my two younger brothers who were still at home at the time. Fast forward to today, my mom is in her mid-70s. She is struggling financially. She doesn't have a lot left over. And so I've seen a situation that could have turned out much more positively, kind of go off the rails. And so that combined with just my natural affinity and joy of working with women over my career, I've just kind of embraced it. And so maybe 6-8 years ago, I just kind of jumped in with both feet and really started focusing on serving more and more women, especially as they prepare for and transition into retirement.
So what are the unique challenges that women face in planning for retirement?
I think there's some, maybe obvious isn't the right word, but I think there's some that are probably fairly common knowledge. I mean, women statistically live longer than men, so they're planning for longer life expectancies. There's the wage gap. So women typically earn 80 cents on the dollar in many roles for the same roles and responsibilities that men have. Many women take time out of the workforce to have children, raise a family. And so those are kind of, in my mind, kind of the baseline challenges. But add to that the fact that many women either assume or are kind of burdened with the caregiver role. So as their parents or older family members start to age and face either physical or mental challenges, often that primary caregiver role falls to the shoulders of the adult daughter. And I've actually seen not just the daughter, I've seen it when women also step in to care for aunts, uncles, other family members. So that can add another unique challenge. I find, especially these days, more and more parents in general, but women especially, seem to be having to support adult children. And that can be financial support. That can be having them come to live at home for a period of time once they're out of college or between jobs. So all of those have a financial impact. And then beyond that, I would say there's also often, not always, but often many women have more of a anxiety around money. Maybe something you could even characterize as a scarcity mindset. I think I've seen some research that says many women suffer from the fear that they're going to wind up broke and alone. And so that often manifests in their financial decision-making because they're so fearful for the future that they can't, they don't feel that they have the option to really enjoy their financial resources today, even leading up to retirement. So that combined with what I often see is a lack of clarity and sometimes a lack of confidence around financial matters, it can really just lead to this perfect storm of women having the deck stacked against them. Thankfully, all these things can be overcome, but there are challenges nevertheless.
Hey, Russ, just to follow on that, if you don't mind, are there any flags that women should be more sensitive to if something's happening that they should take the next step and perhaps look to seek some help about their planning?
So that's a great question, Dennis. I would say flags are something that comes to mind is I often talk to women that they have either deliberately or maybe kind of unconsciously just kind of handed over the financial reins to the primary financial responsibility in their family to their spouse, partner. And as they age, going back to a comment I made earlier that statistically women are going to outlive their spouse, their partner, if it's a man. And so they need to think about and prepare for the fact that they may very well be alone for a period of time, which could be a few years to a couple of decades later in their lives. And so as they get older and they maybe have not been as involved in the family finances, I think that they could kind of use that as a flag or a catalyst to maybe seek some help. And when I say seek help, it's not necessarily hiring a financial advisor. It could be just starting to educate yourself. It could be reading a book. It could be listening to a great podcast like this one. It could be just arming and equipping themselves with a little bit more knowledge so they can make more informed decisions going forward. So that's one that comes to mind among what I'm sure are others.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. That's prudent advice. Get involved, right? Get yourself educated. No, I appreciate that, Russ. Thanks.
Absolutely.
And of course, many of the women listening to this podcast are immersed in their own careers as two career couples, of course, as we know, but there's individual situations across the scale. So you mentioned, Russ, that you've been doing this for over 28 years, and I'm curious, what's different about planning for retirement today versus, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
I touched on this a little bit earlier, but even over the last 10 or 20 years, life expectancies have trended upwards. I think the statistic, because I looked at this recently, I think over the last 20 years or so, life expectancies generally have increased approximately 6 years. So that in and of itself is significant, because that's another 6 years that you need to plan for, both from a lifestyle standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint. But I also see people retiring earlier. So if you think of people living longer, and I think that trend's probably just going to continue to increase as we see advances in technology, healthcare, et cetera, combined with people potentially retiring earlier, the end result is people are faced with more years in retirement. And while that's a great opportunity, it also presents some challenges and certainly some differences from just, say, 10 or 20 years ago. So I think that's something that needs to be acknowledged and planned for accordingly. Beyond that, you know, with the increases in healthcare, technology, generally speaking, if you think back over the past 50 or 60 years, people typically were in a more manual type labor was common. Whereas over the last 10 or 20 years, it's been more kind of knowledge workers, more professional work. And so even over the last 20 years, when someone does retire, they're typically and generally speaking in better health, which leads to better mobility, the ability to do more than just kind of sit around and watch time pass. Again, I see these as opportunities rather than challenges, but they're differences nevertheless. So those are a few that come to mind. I'm sure that, you know, in the next 10 to 20 years from today, we'll just continue to see things evolve. It should be interesting, but yeah, retirement has changed and will continue to change. And I think, frankly, a lot of people's definition of retirement is changing for the better. I listened to a recent episode that you did with their names escape me, but they were talking about their book, which was around the idea of anti-retirement, which I love because retirement is not what it used to be. And I see that changing for the better as people are looking at it more as, okay, I've got another 20, 25, maybe 30, maybe more years ahead of me. How can I fill that period of time with purpose and spend it doing things that I really find rewarding and joyful. I think retirement is and continues to evolve, and I think there's some exciting opportunities around that.
Yes, and that was our conversation with Patty Hart and Millage Hart. She's a former CEO, and Millage is an investment banker. Very interesting view that they have, which is to reject the standard traditional retirement and really define your own. So it's a great point. People are really redefining retirement as we speak. But some fundamentals still apply regardless of the variations that anyone comes up with. And what are the key building blocks of a sound retirement plan?
I think it all starts with clarity of vision. I think so many of us collectively just kind of float along. I think inertia plays such a big role in our planning, in our lives in general, but especially leading up to and into retirement, that we just kind of do what we've always done. And so I think going back to what we were just talking about, this idea of redefining retirement, thinking about what it really means, what it could mean, what opportunities it presents, what things you can do, who you can spend your time with, frankly, who you can be. So I think starting with clarity of vision and really just taking a step back and almost setting the money aside and thinking about, like, let's say next week you're retired, how are you going to spend your first day? Like, what time do you get up? What do you eat for breakfast? Do you exercise? Do you read the news? Do you go to the library? Do you meet up with some friends? I mean, thinking through some of the practical elements of not just the financial elements of retirement, but kind of the day-to-day, like how do you spend your time? Who do you spend your time with? Things like that. So I think that's super important and a great place to start. Getting a little bit more granular, I think it's important to really know how much it costs to be you. So what is your lifestyle cost? And what parts of your lifestyle will change as you transition into retirement? Some costs might go away, some might be introduced. I think the opportunity to strike a balance between being prepared for an uncertain future while still living a great life today. I find so many people seem to be so focused on or maybe even anxious about the future that they're really scared or don't give themselves the liberty to save less, spend more today, spend money on things that they enjoy or they'd enjoy doing with their spouse, their family, et cetera. At the same time, you don't want to be so focused on today that you're basically relying on a hope and a prayer to make things work in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So it's about striking a balance. And then a couple of final things I'd say is it's focus on simplicity over complexity. So many people make their life is crazy and moving fast and faster every day, complex enough as it is. I don't think that your retirement planning, financial or otherwise, needs to add to that complexity. So I think simplicity is important. And I think simplicity is often associated with simplistic or ineffective. In my experience, that couldn't be further from the truth. And the final thing I'll say is focus on the things within your control. So many people are worried about investment markets or the political climate or interest rates or what might happen with this, that, and the other, most of which is not even remotely within your control. Whereas things like your cash flow, how much you spend versus how much you save, how much investment risk you take, when do you retire, and the timing of other goals or milestones in your life, I think are a much better place to focus your time and attention, because those are things that you can, if not completely control, you can certainly influence. So I think those are, I mean, there's clearly a lot that goes into a sound retirement plan, but I think those are a few good starting points and key building blocks.
I think those are great building blocks and great advice. And I concur on the aspect of thinking about a vision and getting clear on a vision. And it seems to me that you support the, not only the financial side, but the more holistic side, the non-financial side of getting people getting ready for this next critical stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would characterize a lot of what I do is maybe kind of borders into financial life planning, because at the end of the day, the money is a tool to help you live a great life. And so knowing what a great life looks like and means to you is important. And so the analogy I often use is when people get into their 50s or 60s and they're approaching retirement, and they look at all of the financial pieces that they've accumulated over a lifetime of work and savings and earnings and things like that, it often looks like a jigsaw puzzle. They've got all these pieces and some of them fit together, some of them maybe not. But it's really, really difficult to put the jigsaw puzzle together if you don't have the picture on the box to kind of serve as a guide or kind of serve as a guiding light to give you direction and purpose as you move forward. So I think taking a step back and getting really clear about what is the picture on your puzzle box will make it much easier to see how the pieces fit together, what pieces that you need to keep in place, what pieces you don't, things like that. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that it's a disservice if you focus just on the finances and hope that your lifestyle works out. I think, frankly, it should be done the other way around.
Yeah, it's a great analogy too to a puzzle box. Well said. I like that.
I just want to call out your great line of how much does it cost to be you? That caught my attention. Good question.
Yes. Great line.
Yeah. Thanks. I stumbled across that. I'd love to attribute it to someone else. I don't remember where I first saw it, but that really just kind of puts a fine point on figuring out what your life and lifestyle cost. And I find so many people, even those that are on the brink of retirement, don't really know what they spend, which is revealing in many on several levels. But I think, yeah, just figuring out what it costs to be you, I think is a great, perhaps maybe the most important step in kind of building your retirement plan.
So Russ, based on your experience, what are some things that many people listening don't know about retirement planning, but should?
Well, I'll harken back to something I said earlier. It's simple. Now, don't mistake me. That doesn't mean it's always easy, but it's really simple. It's hopefully being in a position to live within your means and then looking at future sources of income, whether that's Social Security or a pension or whatever else you might have in place, and then figuring out a way to accumulate assets to supplement your income to support your lifestyle. Now, clearly I'm glossing over a lot of the details, and the big X factor is none of us know how long we're going to live at the end of the day, nor do we know what state of health we'll be in as we approach end of life. And so that could obviously introduce some complexities and other considerations. But on its surface, it's really pretty simple. So as I mentioned earlier, so many people just seem to unnecessarily complicate things when it comes to their retirement planning. And I find a lot of professionals do this too. A lot of advisors introduce complexity as a way to justify higher fees or to justify their value proposition. And I just don't think it needs to be that complex. I think simple is better, typically costs less. It typically is more tax efficient. So again, I would bring people back to the idea of simplicity. In addition, I would say that your retirement plan should be your retirement plan. It should not be what you think it should be, what your parents or friends or your brother-in-law or your sister expects of you. Your retirement plan should be uniquely yours. And again, that I think underlines the idea of taking a step back and being contemplative about what makes you happy. How do you like to spend your time? Who do you like to spend it with? What does a life well lived look like for you? And if you're married, what does that look like for both of you? So I think it's a real opportunity. It's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity to really take the time to find kind of your unique path forward and make your life, and more specifically your retirement plan, make it your own. I think also a lot of people are, and I think the financial media and a lot of financial professionals are contributors to this, but I think many people think that retirement is working as long as you can, saving as much as you can, and then planning to spend as little as you can afford to, just to potentially run the risk of dying on a mattress filled with money that you could have otherwise spent. I think the better approach, as I mentioned earlier, is striking a balance. How do you live a great life today while still being prepared for tomorrow? I encounter so many people, you probably have as well, that either explicitly or implicitly are thinking, when I retire, that's when I'm really going to start living. That's when life's really going to be great. That's when I'll have enough money to do things I've always done. And my question is, well, why wait until you're 60 or 65 or 70 to really start enjoying your life? Why not start doing it now? And that doesn't mean you can quit work or give up your paycheck, but you can start introducing elements of what you'd love to do in retirement today while you're still working, whether that's how and where you vacation, whether that's how you spend your time outside of work, whether that's learning or pursuing a new hobby. I think it's just thinking a little bit more broadly about what you can do today and still plan to do in the future, as opposed to signing up to this kind of what I refer to as this deferred life plan, that life's really going to start and really be great once I retire. Well, that could be when you're 65 years old or older. And while hopefully you're still in good health, you're not going to be as in good a health as you are when you're, say, 50, when you could maybe travel more or introduce a little bit more adventure to your life. So I just like to always emphasize the idea that it's not necessarily either or. It can be and. You can do things now and in retirement. You don't have to wait. And plus, if you wait, you run the risk that you're not here. Tomorrow isn't promised, and I'm sure we all have heard or maybe know people that have planned to retire and for one reason or another, they never made it to retirement, or they retired in a year or two or three in and something happened and they didn't even get to enjoy all the years they'd planned on. So I think you need to think about how you can start enjoying your life today while still, obviously, while still preparing for a comfortable and confident retirement ahead.
So what are the mistakes that you see people make in planning for retirement that can be avoided?
Well, one that we've already touched on that I'll highlight again is just not being thoughtful or not thinking through the non-financial elements of retirement. Clearly, retirement planning revolves around making sure that you've got the financial pieces in place to support your life, no matter how long you live. But I think it's worthwhile to also spend time thinking about how are you going to spend your time? Who are you going to spend your time with? What are you going to stop doing once you're retired? You know, maybe that gives you the opportunity to eliminate some things in your life that by necessity that you're dealing with now related to work or other commitments. You know, are you going to become more involved in a church or a charity? Do you want to volunteer? Maybe you want to continue to work, but do something that's more fulfilling or rewarding or more of a passion project. So I think really thinking about how you're going to spend time in retirement is important. So many people think of retirement as this escape from work. And I think the better approach is to, instead of trying to retire from work, is to think about what can you retire to? What do you look forward to doing in retirement? I think that mental shift can be, it's subtle, but I think it can be really important. As I mentioned, I think a common mistake is many people wait until retirement before they think they can really start living their lives. And I think, as I mentioned a moment ago, I think that's just a false assumption. I think that's something that needs to be challenged and present some opportunities to really start doing some things now. And by doing them now, you also have the opportunity to kind of test your theories and see, you know, if you thought I'd always like to do XYZ in retirement, well, maybe you can try it now and see if it's something you really enjoy. And you may find out you don't. Better to find that out now than waiting another 10 or 15 or 20 years and having built up this expectation around it, only to find out that maybe it wasn't quite what you had thought. Other mistakes are I often find people are taking too much investment risk now, but they also think that once they retire, they can basically almost turn off the investment risk dial. So they could go from a stock or equity portfolio today, and once they get retired, they can go to almost the other end of the spectrum and go to mostly fixed income CDs, things like that. While that can work in certain circumstances, I think that the better approach is to take less risk now if you can afford to and have more of a long-term approach leading up to and through retirement when it comes to investment risk, as opposed to this potentially big shift at retirement, because you never know timing-wise if that's going to make sense or if that's going to work out for you or not, regards to when you retire and what's going on in the investment and other markets. And then just, I kind of round that out by saying, I often found people are maxing out 401ks and IRAs and things like that when maybe they don't need to. Maybe they could enjoy more of their discretionary income today while their kids are still at home or while they still have the physical fitness to do things that maybe they might not have the ability to do later in life. Or maybe they're working longer than they need to. There's no more fun conversation I have with people than showing them that they can actually retire sooner than they thought they could. Now, sometimes they still want to work longer because they actually enjoy their work, but knowing that work is optional sooner just kind of lifts a burden from their shoulders. I mean, you can physically see them just kind of lighten up, which is just the greatest experience. So among some of the mistakes, and there are many, and we probably don't have time to get into them all, but those are a few that come to mind when it comes to retirement planning.
So there's the planning and then there's the execution, and the transition to retirement comes with challenges. I wonder if you could tell us a story about how one of your clients navigated challenges in transitioning to retirement.
Yeah. So one that comes to mind is a client. She is successful, has done very, very well, and she'll be the first to admit this, a lot of her identity is wrapped up in her work and her career. And as I've touched on already in our conversation, someone that's kind of a hard-charging executive that has been successful, that has gotten not just a lot of their personal identity from their work, but they also have a lot of their like positive feedback loops, like getting a good job review from their boss, for example, or getting either company or industry accolades, or just their kind of their social network around work. Well, once you retire, much, if not all of that goes away. So thinking about not just the financial transition into retirement, but thinking about kind of the psychological and the mental transition into losing perhaps a big chunk of your identity, if it's really wrapped up into your work and your career, losing a routine, going to work, that's largely been disrupted here over the last year, year and a half with COVID. But I think still just having, whether it's in the office or on Zoom calls, still just interacting with a group of people that you're kind of used to interacting and working with on a regular basis, you know, not getting that quote unquote applause. So like job well done at work, a lot of that goes away. So how do you replace that? Or do you replace that once you're retired? And so what we did is we took a step back and we had some conversations around how can you continue that? Well, first we talked about, did she want to continue that? And she said that she wanted to attempt to. So we looked at how could she continue to do that in a non-full-time work role? And so we talked about getting involved with a nonprofit or serving on a board of trustees or something like that, really exploring what her interests lie personally, what things, people, and organizations are important to her. And we came up with a strategy or a plan for her to start exploring some other opportunities to at least partially replace some of the things that she admitted she was a little bit worried about losing once she retired. And so far, we're still in the exploratory stages of that, but it's going well, and it's given her a purpose. She has a list of action items that she's working through, and we're continuing to discuss it together and evaluate her choices and decisions as she reaches them. And a related, but another quick anecdote I'll share too, is when you go from working full-time to retirement, there's also this shift from saving and accumulating to spending. And that can even boil down to like looking at a retirement plan or 401k balance. Market volatility is one thing, but when you're adding a contribution to a 401k every 2 weeks through payroll, it helps smooth out the ups and downs. Once you retire, once the paycheck goes away, once you're no longer pumping money into your 401k or IRA or your 403b plan on a regular basis, you don't have those contributions that help smooth out market volatility. And so now you're faced with market volatility, you're faced with no paycheck, and now you have to go from that mental shift from, all right, I've been saving perhaps for 30 or 40 years. Am I willing to start spending it? And clearly, you're going to have to spend it out of necessity. But I find that it's often very difficult for people to make that mental shift from saving and accumulating to starting to spend. And as a result, I find a lot of people underspend, especially the first few years of retirement, when in reality, that should be, if they're going to overspend, maybe they should actually overspend a little bit more early in retirement when they're younger, more mobile, want to travel, want to do more things. So that's certainly not an exhaustive list of challenges, but there are certainly some unique things to consider and be cognizant of when you're actually making the transition into retirement.
Appreciate that. And many people listening, but not all, have a spouse or partner. And for those folks, retirement planning is not a topic that's often discussed, or at least not fully. What's your advice for couples on how they can get on the same page about retirement?
So that's a really interesting question. And it's my opinion that when you're talking about a couple, there's actually three relationships at play. So each person has their own relationship, their own history, their own philosophies, beliefs, habits around money, and they have their relationship with money as a couple. And so they actually need to kind of juggle and navigate three relationships as opposed to just their relationship. I think the best way to do that is to, again, kind of move the money out of the way and talk in practical terms about what are your expectations for retirement? Like, how do you want to spend your time? You know, spend all of our time with our kids and grandkids? Do you want to travel? Do you want to stay in the house that we're in? Do you want to relocate? Do you want to travel domestically? Do you want to travel abroad if that's an option? Do you want to be active and take up a new hobby or sport? And get specific. How are we going to spend our first days, our first weeks, our first months in retirement? Are we going to want to spend every waking moment with each other? Or more likely, are we going to want some together time and some alone time? And I think it's important to get very clear and be very communicative about each person's expectations and see where you're aligned. And more importantly, see where you're maybe not aligned. And not aligned is not a problem. It's just an opportunity to get on the same page and reach an understanding. Once you have those conversations and think about how are we going to spend our time? both together and apart. What are we going to do? Who do we want to be with? What's that going to look like with kids or grandkids? What's that going to look like with our church or our community? What's that going to look like with continuing to learn and keep ourselves stimulated mentally as well as physically? Once you've had those conversations and have a better understanding, then you start reintroducing money and saying, all right, well, if we want to do A, B, and C, and you want to do X, Y, and Z, and together we want to do these other two or three things, do we have the finances to support that? And if we do, is that going to be a sustainable something we can do over a long period of time? Or is it something we're going to be able to do for a few years and we're going to have to reevaluate? And again, there's not necessarily a right or wrong here, as long as the financial resources support what it is that each person in the relationship envisions for their retirement. Again, both individually and collectively. I think it goes back to the analogy I gave earlier of the puzzle box. And no more, and this analogy is maybe no more appropriate than in the situation of a couple, because each person has their own puzzle pieces and they need to both understand what the picture on the box is for each of them, as well as for their relationship or their themselves as a couple, to help them understand how best to assemble the pieces of their lives and their financial pieces together in a way that's going to work for both of them, as well as work for them individually for the rest of their lives. And so there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of opportunity there to communicate and have regular check-ins. But I think it all begins with just communication and seeking understanding from the other person and trying to understand what their expectations are.
Yeah, the foundation of it is really good communication skills between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when it comes to money in general and retirement planning specifically, there is no such thing as over-communicating.
So Russ, tell us about wealth care for women. How does that work?
So I work for a firm, an independent advisory firm called Wealthcare Capital Management. They're based in Richmond, Virginia. And for the last half dozen, 8 years or so, I have operated under a brand called Wealthcare for Women. So you can go to my website, which is wealthcareforwomen.com, and learn a little bit more. But it is really the embodiment of my focus on serving women in their, you know, late 50s, early 60s as they're planning for and transitioning into retirement. And the way it works is if a woman is introduced to me or referred to me by a client or by another professional, if she finds me on my website or elsewhere online and reaches out, we have an initial consultation. There's no cost or obligation for that. And it's really just an opportunity to spend 15, 20, 30 minutes on the phone to talk and see if we can communicate well together and see if we're fairly well aligned in terms of philosophy and her needs and how and where I think I can add value. If so, and if we decide to proceed, I schedule a discovery meeting. That's usually an hour and a half meeting where I really just ask a lot of questions. I typically do that over a Zoom call, and I actually create a mind map on the screen in real time with the information and the answers that the person shares with me. And it's not just financial information. We spend a lot of time talking about qualitative information. I ask a lot about values and what's important to them. I use some life planning tools from George Kinder, some from Money Quotient. I also want to understand their relationships, family, organizations. I even ask about pets, which I know are important to many people. They certainly are to my wife and I. We talk about goals. We obviously cover the quantitative financial information, like what do you have? What do you owe? What income sources do you expect in the future? What do you earn? What do you save? Things like that. We talk about other advisors they work with. We talk about their interests personally. And then we talk a little bit about the process and how I typically work with clients. From there, we go to the process of building a plan. And the planning approach that I employ is very iterative. It's not a printed document that I hand to the client and review with them and it's done. I describe financial planning as the central nervous system to everything I do with and for my clients. And so I present the first iteration or first draft of their plan, and we go through that. And I basically explain how we look at planning, how we evaluate their choices and the trade-offs among those choices. And we collaboratively arrive at their working plan. And that could be in one meeting, it might take two or three meetings to get to kind of their plan. But even the best laid plan is going to change. And so once we start to work on and implement the plan together, the most important part of what I do with my clients is the ongoing progress meetings where we reevaluate their plan, we accommodate new information, changes in their life personally and professionally, and bring the plan up to date and say, are we still on track or are we not? If we are, great. Let's keep rocking along until we have another progress meeting in a few months. If we need to make some adjustments, it's not the plan's off track, so we automatically do A, B, or C. It really facilitates a discussion where we, again, evaluate their choices and the trade-offs between choice A versus B versus C and make a choice that is most comfortable for them while still getting the plan on a sustainable long-term track. In the execution, I help with investment management. I do a lot of tax planning with my clients. But when it comes to actual tax prep and filing or estate planning and legal docs or either reviewing or putting insurance policies in place, I bring other professionals to the table for that. I'm a fee-only advisor, so I don't sell any products. I don't earn any commissions. So the work I do really boils down to ongoing financial planning and portfolio management as part of the plan, and then bringing in other subject matter experts and professionals as needed to round out their plan or to address items that come up along the way. So in a nutshell, that's what WealthCare for Women is.
Great. Thanks, Russ. One last question. What's the upside of life in retirement that you see your clients living today?
Well, I consider myself a fairly positive, optimistic person. And so I see a lot of upside in retirement today and going forward. I mean, people have more information, more choices, more capabilities today than ever before. I think that's probably only going to increase. Now, again, more information, more choices, more capabilities can be a positive or a negative. For many people, it can be paralyzing because they're basically overwhelmed with choice. They're trapped in the paradox of choice. And so that can really highlight the benefit of certain people working with a financial professional, a financial advisor, or a financial planner to help them navigate their choices and to make more informed decisions. But whether they need to or want to work with a financial advisor or not, I just see wonderful upside. People can do more. They can be more. They just have more opportunities to do and be and pursue whatever it is that is important to them that makes their life joyful and feel fulfilled. And so I think that that's a huge element and a huge piece of the retirement upside. And I think, again, I don't want to harp on this, but I think it just really, really reinforces this idea of getting clear about who you are, who you want to be, how you want to live your life, how you want to live your one and only life, and making sure that that is informing your retirement planning, your financial decisions, your lifestyle decisions. And I think that that's a great way, that clarity of vision, that picture on the puzzle box, as we've referred to it, is a great way to combat the potential overwhelm of all this information and choice that retirees are faced with today and will be faced with in the future. But overall, I see just wonderful, wonderful opportunities. You know, whether it's playing pickleball or getting involved in a charity or a volunteer organization or doing whatever is important to you and or your spouse or partner if you're married, there's just unlimited upside. And I think retirement planning done well, done effectively, yet kept simple, is just going to unlock more upside for people that invest the time and energy to do that.
Well, Russ, thanks so much for taking the time to share your insights with us today. Very helpful.
Yeah, this has been fun, Joe. I appreciate you and Dennis inviting me on. I've enjoyed the conversation and always enjoy listening to your podcast episode. So it was fun to be a part of it.
Great. Thanks so much.
Same here, Russ. Thank you. That was a fun and informative conversation with Russ Thornton today. Joe, what were your takeaways?
A few things I'd highlight. First, about his comment, how are you going to really invest your time in this one and only life? And makes me think of other guests we've had that are financial advisors who talk about flipping the script. What's the money for? Do you have a vision of what your life is going to be like and how you want to use it? So I thought that was intriguing. I also thought his point about getting a sense of the current state. How much does it cost to be you? How much will it cost to be you in the future? Getting a clear picture of that. And then his comments about when come to the table as a couple, each person has their own relationship with money. That's important to acknowledge. And then finally, his point on don't defer, don't wait. You can begin to live differently today and not have the vision of waiting to someday when you retire, when everything's going to be great. How about you?
Yeah, so I like the flip the script thing a lot, Joe. And you know, he gave an analogy to this puzzle, right? Which I thought was a great thing. A puzzle in a box. What's the puzzle on the box that you want to get to? He really recommended thinking about creating a vision, What are you going to do with your time? Practical elements, the simplicity of things, not that this has to be so complex, and things you can control and things you can't control. So I thought those were kind of the highlights that he had. The other recommendation, and we've seen this, is as people come out of one particular phase of life called work and they get into this next phase, which is this freedom and retirement, it's a great time of life, it's important for them to look at it as not an escape from something, but rather they're going towards something and creating opportunities for themselves. So he mentioned a couple of things when he talks to clients. He says, what are you willing to stop? I would also offer them, think about what you want to stop, what you want to start, what you want to continue. This is a fresh opportunity for people. And you have to blend and balance the non-financial side of planning with the financial side of planning and flipping the script, right, Joe? The non-financial side will lead to the planning side and integrate well with it. So those are my takeaways today.
Great. And thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com. You'll find free resources and all 110 plus episodes of our podcast that you can browse across all four seasons. Thanks again.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.